This is an ABC podcast.
Do you remember that darling little boy who used to nestle into your lap, make cheeky jokes about poos and bums, and cry loudly for you at night when he thought there was a monster under his bed? Maybe you're not there yet, but when that boy hit adolescence, did it feel like aliens had taken him to the mothership and replaced him with a being from outer space?
A lot of parents actually get to the teenage years and it's like they've lost their boys. You know, the boys are on their computers the whole time. Parents can be very busy working with their lives, and then things start going wrong and we're trying to claw it back. And I believe we need to be starting as early as possible with common sense parenting and supporting our boys as they're becoming adults.
Hello, I'm Maggie Dent. And if you're a parent of tween or teen boys, or even if your son is still in nappies, I'm here to prepare you and help you through the very tumultuous journey that is the teens. In the next episode, I'll talk about what to expect from your daughter's tween and teen years. And later this season, we'll talk about what life can be like for kids who are transgender or non-binary. However, in this episode, we'll get some tips for helping our tween and teen boys navigate this confusing and difficult time of massive change. Dr. Anna Rubenstein has 30 years' experience as a medical doctor, counsellor, mentor, and is an expert in adolescent development. A big part of his work is facilitating rites of passage for boys as they reach adolescence and bridge the journey to manhood. Anna, let's start at the beginning of adolescence. Now, what do parents need to know about these initial changes in the early stages of adolescence?
Well, they need to know that it's massive, and the boys are, you know, they're overwhelmed by hormones and muscle growth and hair, and all of a sudden they're waking up in the morning or going to school and they've got massive erections, and, you know, it's all happening, and it's like it's
wet
out of control.
Patches in the bed.
Yeah, they've got no one to talk to about it. And really, we need to be supporting them. And what tends to happen is we go, oh, it's too much. And a lot of them, you know, it's a very, I know it was for me, it was a very lonely journey. And I would have loved someone to talk to. And we need to, you know, in the same way as they're totally changing, we need to change our relationship with them. And we need to look at the, it's not only the boys who are changing, it's the parents who also need to change in terms of our role and our relationship with the boys needs to change. You know, we need to have conversations with them about adulthood, about being a man, sharing our own stories and having the boys get an opportunity to hear the stories, not only of their own parents, but of other adults. So it's a community event to really welcome these boys into the next stage of their lives. And if we can do that for them, that is life-changing, not only for the boys, but also for the parents. And if we don't do it and the boys go off the rails during this period, the damage that can occur can impact on the rest of their lives.
And I think we need to start reassuring parents that it's incredibly confusing and stressful for our boys. No boy wants to get out of bed grumpy and moody and forget things and get growled at. None of them want that. And so, you know, some of those changes that are happening in that brain can make that a little bit worse. Now, a question that's probably most teenage boys are asked often is, what were you thinking when they make a poor choice? Talk to me about boys and taking risks.
Well, look, first of all, I think they're probably not thinking. You know, when we used to get these teenagers come into the casualty and I'd get the girls come in and I'd say to them, you know, did you know it was going to go badly? Did you know it wasn't a good idea? And the girls would go, yeah, we did know it, but we did it anyway, which is a whole nother discussion. But when I'd say to the boys, did you know it was going to go badly? They'd go, nah, we didn't even think about that. You know, they just, as I say, they saw an opportunity and it's like, oh, I can jump that and I can jump that and I can do that. The most important thing is we're not shaming them. Say, you know, we love you, but this turned out really badly. Let's talk about it. What can we learn from this? I had my stepson who's 16, got his L's, bought himself a car, saved up, thought it'd be a good idea to put four of his mates in the car and drive unlicensed through the streets to show him his new car, rode it off. you know, came about as close as you can come to having the greatest disaster in the world and killing yourself or others and even ending up in jail. But he wasn't thinking about that. He was thinking about his friends. Afterwards, we took him and all of his mates home and we sat around and we talked about it. And we said, how did you feel? What did you learn? What would we do differently next time? You know, we just need to be, when they do make mistakes, whether they're terrible mistakes or small mistakes, see it as an opportunity to discuss it, to learn from it, to agree together on what consequences. You know, every person mucks up at some stage in their life. And as teenagers, that is massively magnified. So they will make mistakes, as we did. The most important thing is that we try and learn and grow from those mistakes rather than shame them, which sends the behaviour underground.
And we need to remind parents that they don't have an executive functioning brain that's fully developed. That doesn't finish till mid to late 20s. So we cut them some slack there. And also GABA, you know, the gamma aminobutyric acid, which is this beautiful amino acid that inhibits impulses, that's turned off as well. So this is a developmentally normal thing. And then one other aspect of them taking risks is boys tend to measure their own self-worth by what they succeed, and they are meant to be stretching and growing. So there's lots of reasons why we absolutely, what you said, we mustn't shame them. We mustn't see them as bad or naughty or flawed or thick. They're exactly doing the sorts of things of this age group, and the consequences become the teachable moment.
A great process to do when this happens and the parents are like stressed out about it is to start the discussion by saying to the parents, oh, before we talk about what your son did, tell us what you did when you were a teenager. What's the stupidest thing you ever did? Then have the conversation.
Hopefully he sticks with his really good group of friends and he always is mindful of the dangers of things that, you know, when he's out. Mm-hmm. Drinking with friends or potentially, you know, could be offered drugs or anything. Hopefully he's being brought up the right way.
One thing that definitely worries me about my children is sometimes worried about their safety. I know that I can trust my children and they're very sensible. I really trust them 100%, but you never know what experience will come their way.
What are the biggest challenges about being too overprotective for our teen boys?
Well, simply put, if we're too overprotective, they will not learn how to look after themselves. So we need to stretch it as far as we can in terms of letting them make mistakes, not doing everything for them, and put a reasonable limit on what, you know, is allowed to happen. But knowing that it's by them doing it themselves and them getting themselves out of sort of whatever mess they get into that they actually learn.
Toxic masculinity. How do you see that difference between masculinity and toxic masculinity?
I look at it that it's a journey. So our boys are on a journey. They start off as babies and then they're boys and then they're young men and then they're adults and elders, and it's a staircase and it's about supporting them to move up these steps. And if they get stuck on a step, so if they get stuck in boy psychology or boy behavior, which is fine when they're 8 years old, and boy behavior is I'm the center of the universe and I need constant acknowledgement and I can't handle my emotions and I want a mother. I want a mother to be there and do everything for me. Now, that's okay in an 8-year old. But if we end up with an adult man who still thinks he's the center of the universe and wants constant acknowledgement and can't handle his emotions, if he doesn't get what he wants, he has a temper tantrum or hits someone, and who still thinks his partner is there to be his mother, that for me is when we get toxic masculinity. And when I look at some of the leaders in the world and some of the things that are happening, and I go, wow, we've got boys in these positions of power. So for me, toxic masculinity, or whatever you want to call it, is men who are still behaving as boys. Healthy masculinity is when those men realize that they're actually part of a community and they have an important role to play and they can handle their emotions. And it's not about acknowledgement, it's about doing what they believe is right. And they're not looking for a mother, they're looking for partners to have genuine relationships with. And we need more of those men.
How have you changed the way you work with teenagers, knowing that their world is becoming less set in the gendered expectation that their parents and you and I grew up with?
Yeah, well, I've been doing this for 25 years now, Maggie, and definitely seeing a big change. And it used to be a much clearer, you know, there's boys and boys become men and girls are becoming women. And today I look at it that, you know, all of our children have a mix of boy and girl in them, or masculine or feminine in them, however you want to express it. And in some of them, it comes out more on one gender than the other. And so when we work with our teenagers, we accept that each of them are individuals, and we have to support them to express and to be with the gender that they feel most comfortable with.
Rites of passage. You've been a huge advocate for this, and I'm seeing it happening more and more in our schools. So what is it in a modern term?
Okay, so in terms of creating a rite of passage, it's really about picking the time when we feel it's right to celebrate and acknowledge the shift that our boy is going through, which is somewhere around year nine, and bringing together the community. And then there is a series of steps which involves allowing the boy to hear the stories of elders as a way of getting information and knowledge and wisdom, getting the boy to create a vision for how he wants to be as a man, not what he's been told by the internet or friends or even his own parents, but what is this boy's personal vision as to how what he would like his life to be, creating challenges for the boys, because let's face it, boys want challenges, but when they create their own and it's unfacilitated, it's, you know, it can be incredibly dangerous, and we need to be supporting them to find ways that we can push them, but we're not losing them. And then honouring and recognising that each of them is different, and that they each have gifts and a genius and a spirit, and really naming that. And what we know is a lot of boys either don't recognise their own gifts or don't value them. And so when we create an environment where we sit them down and we say, hey, son, I see in you these things. And so we might say, you know, I see that you're courageous. Because when a kid did something bad to another kid at school, you came up and you stood up for the kid who'd been given a hard time. And that's really brave and courageous. And that's a gift that you have. And if we can do those things, it changes their lives and it changes their relationships with their families.
So what are some small things that families can do?
First of all, for the family to recognize their boy's changing and we need to do something. And actually, it's usually pretty obvious. You know, the boy will be just different. You know, he starts grunting and he doesn't want to talk to you anymore, and the door's locked all the time to the bathroom and his bedroom, and, you know, so
and
something's
smells.
Going on here. Yeah, any of those things. And so then it's about the family. And, you know, I have to say, I'm not sure if it's a small thing. I would encourage families to create big things and put aside a day or a weekend and invite the elders of the family, with uncles, grandparents, people the boy have grown up with, and spend some time and you know, share stories from those people about when they were the age of the boy and about the family history, and, you know, really making it a formal thing, and even to talk about our own vision as we move forward. So if you say to a boy, you know, in 5-10 years time, what sort of a man do you want to be? But also for other people in the who are there to go, well, and in 5-10 years time, what sort of a person do I want to be? The boys, once again, they're so hungry for that.
We know that our boys are struggling the same as our girls. Can you, you know, tell me, is the stigma around help-seeking behaviour changing in this landscape? Because we know they could do with some help at times, the same as men. Is it changing, or is it still pretty much the same, that that's a sign of weakness?
Well, the recent research from places like the Black Dog Institute and is showing that they're still more likely to seek help from the internet or their peers than from parents or people who are, you know, so-called qualified to help them. So I think we now recognize that help-seeking behavior is something that boys don't do, but we're still struggling. You know, what we find in a lot of the schools we work in is that the counseling department, for example, the kids don't want to go there. They don't want to walk across the oval to the room which has counseling on it, and
yeah,
everybody
no
sees
way.
Them and, yeah, and all the rest. So A, we have to change it. And the other thing that, you know, is just so valuable for boys is to bring mentors into their lives. So men outside of the immediate family who might be uncles or grandfathers or family friends, and for them to be able to spend time with them and have healthy discussions with them, and to be able to, you know, have a man who's checking in with that boy and saying, how are you going? And you know, what's going well? And is there anything that you're struggling with? And imagine if every boy had a mentor.
Oh, lighthouse figures, I call them. So it's like the tribe. Yes, they definitely need good men. But really when they've mucked up and need some sort of emotional, understanding of what's been going on, sometimes that auntie figure is also important. We always talk about it for girls. But I can tell you I have a tribe of boys who have found that that was a safe thing again.
I completely agree. This work is as relevant for girls who also need rites of passage as it is for boys. And mentors don't have to be men for boys. They can be men or women in the same way for girls. They can be men and women.
As a part of my uni years, I want to make new friends and kind of drift away from my high school friends to find more people that have similar interests. But I'm also kind of conflicted in that, as they might be a bit mad or annoyed that I'm trying to drift away and move without them.
Stress from school, or the stress I get thinking about what I want to be when I grow up. I guess I should start thinking about it, but I don't like, you know, being pressured.
The worst part is they make it seem like high school is the end or be all. But then as soon as you go into uni, you have all these options of bridging courses, free stuff you could do, or extra courses, stuff you could do to be able to catch up. And honestly, the only issue is like, just spend a bit more time doing it and you should be fine.
Boys often tell me that why they often disengage at school is because it's all about the grades and the marks. And they don't want to fail. So how do we encourage in our boys a really healthy striving for success that's not going to be too high but high enough so that they know that, you know, work ethic does matter, or that aiming for something does matter even if sometimes we don't get it?
Yeah, well, it comes down to having good, healthy conversations with them and supporting them. But then if they do fail, once again, sharing stories of times when things didn't work out for us, and then importantly, having the discussion with them around, can you see why you failed? Can you see what you would do differently next time? Can you see how we could support you more next time? So that failure becomes a learning of experience. And that's actually how they learn resilience. And if they never fail, then by the time they leave home, leave school, they have no resilience. And then it's a real problem, because the first time something does go wrong, they don't have the coping skills to deal with it.
One of the other big ones that comes up a lot, even in my survey work, and I know yours, is the frustration that parents feel in the pushback of boys not wanting to step up around home, do their chores or be responsible, and we let them get away with it. Now, they're meant to be picking up those life skills, and then they're meant to be separating from us. We're preparing boys to leave home one day. How do they pick up these life skills and step up? And also, how do we help mums and dads individuate, allow those boys to individuate and separate at the same time as not picking up and doing things for them too much?
It's a huge question that you're asking me. And it's
yes.
It's also about stepping back and giving the boy space. But having said that, being really clear about what's the privilege that you want, and if you do this act, you know, if you do this responsibility, you get that privilege. And if you don't, you don't get it.
And I think one of the other challenges is that really it can be really hard to maintain that loving, connected presence, you know, when they are being difficult, and even though they don't know why they're being difficult. So what is your last top tip for parents?
Okay, my top tip for parents would be to make sure that whatever age your child is, you have something that you do one-on-one together that you both enjoy, and you turn off your mobile phone when you're doing it. My sons, who are now grown up, we still have an adventure together once a year when we go away and we do something. And when they were younger, we used to kick the football together. And it was often when we were going home in the car afterwards that they would ask me something or tell me something. So having something that you do one-on-one together with each of your children, and it's your special time. You don't ask them a heap of questions about what's going on in their lives. You just do it. And if they want to talk or share, ask questions, they will, but give it the space to happen.
Anna, thank you so much for all you've given us to how to raise our boys to be happy, healthy men.
Thanks, Maggie, and thanks for everything you do as well.
Okay, so as well as the risk-taking, the change in communication, and of course the smells, there's one other thing you've probably noticed about your son, and I bet it's frustrating the hell out of you. Is he more forgetful than he used to be? I need to reassure you that this is also part of that brain pruning that happens in early adolescence. The good old brain just accidentally prunes off a bit too much. So remember that they don't want to be more forgetful. And for many boys, when they get this stage happening, they think they've suddenly become more dumb and they can get really hard on themselves. So we work with our boys. What is a way that I can help remind you without you feeling like I'm nagging or I'm all over your case? Problem solve forgetfulness with your sons. Anna talked about having conversations, whatever the issue. And I want to give you a tip or two to help you make that happen so that it actually works. The first thing is, make sure you use that term of endearment for your son. You need to connect with him in a way that doesn't seem like he's going to cop it. So, hey, bud, hey, dude, whatever it is. Secondly, check your timing. Please don't do it when he's just gone out of bed or he's eating or he's on his phone or he's got an exam or there's a poo that's due. Any of those things. Just choose the time. And then underneath that, make sure that what your intention is actually for his greatest good and it's worthwhile having a conversation about. Sometimes we need to learn how not to sweat the small stuff to save those big conversations for the important stuff. Next time, raising teen girls.
Girls are often got their boxing gloves on and they're puffing their chest out and they're wanting to be independent and they can hurl the most horrendous things and I hate you and the worst mum in the world and the door slams and we can buy into that so easily when really the reality is that you're just annoying her right now and it can be...
We annoy them a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
If you thought raising teen boys was a lot to take in, wait until you hear the great information and the useful tips I've got for you around helping your daughter shine as she goes through her teen years. That's next on Parental as Anything with me, Maggie Dent.
I'm Elizabeth Koolass, host of the ABC podcast, Days Like These. If you're a fan of Parental as Anything, we thought you might also enjoy Days Like These. Each episode of the show features one person going through the wildest, funniest, strangest, and maybe even the most stressful experience of their lives. Like the time the Skillen family set out on an Easter weekend camping trip and ended up caught in the nightmare scenario of tracking their three-year-old through the bush after he wanders off in search of a mythical creature. Oh, and as much as we love a good twist on this show, I promise this one has a happy ending. We wouldn't do that to you.
The police set it up so they did a section at a time and they all lined up a metre apart and they were walking through the bush, calling out his name.
I'd go away from the camp, sometimes quite a distance, and then get the feeling that James was actually back at the camp and it was all okay. And of course, I'd get back and he wasn't.
Is there anything about the twin intuition? And I thought, I'm just going to ask Sam what he thinks. You know, is James okay? And so I went over to him and I said, you know, Sam, do you think James is okay? And he said, he's fine, Mum. He's fine. He's just gone to look for the Gruffalo.
You can find new episodes of Days Like These on your ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.